And when I talked to that senior SEAL leader, he said something that has stuck with me throughout my entire life. He said, people will follow you if you give them a reason to.
Podcasting from WealthWave Studios in Johns Creek, Georgia, this is Leadership Now, the official vision and strategy podcast of WealthWave.
All right. What's going on, Commander?
Just another great day. Well, it's not the Sunshine State, but we'll take Georgia for now.
Hey, I'm right there with you. Georgia's not a bad place. Although I will admit that Georgia and Fort Benning in the winter was freezing.
Okay, well, that's why I live in Florida and not going anywhere except to visit.
Someday we're moving down to Florida. My wife and I've already said that. I like the tropical weather much better than any of the cold.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. Hey, I really do appreciate you being on with us today. I have background in the military just like you, and I'm excited to hear some of your thoughts on some of the things that you have transferred from the military to how you're doing business today. I believe that leadership is focused on being a leader of one, and if you lead one, you can lead many. But if you can't lead one, you can't lead any. When did you realize you had what it took to go into that leadership position as you made the transition from being an enlisted member on the SEAL team to going into the officer program?
Well, I'd love to tell you that I stepped in as a SEAL officer, crushing it and just leading by example. But I'll be honest, I actually failed colossally. And the reason being, I thought so highly of my capabilities. I had excelled up to that point, and I was young. And I think oftentimes with youth and achieving an elite status, sometimes it's easy to get arrogant and to get caught up in the idea of leadership and start to focus more on positional leadership versus truly dynamic, inspirational leadership. And long story short, I made a lot of bad decisions as a young leader, all of which culminated with a poor decision on a combat mission in Afghanistan. And in that mission, in that moment, we were involved in a firefight, and I was in an overwatch position on the high ground of a valley. We had a group moving through down below, and they got into a big firefight. They needed reinforcements, and I made the decision to take myself and my machine gunner down in the valley to try and support them. The problem with that call is I made it, we were having erratic communications, and I made it without fully vetting that through the ground force commander. And I made it without all the information that was going on the battlefield. One of the things we didn't know that there were air assets up overhead, and then they were calling those air assets in. So when I took myself and my machine gunner down off that valley, off that ridge line and down into the valley, suddenly, we now had multiple maneuvering elements without communications and them trying to drop air support. You, as a former military, know that's a really complicated and bad situation. And thankfully, no one was killed. No one was injured because of my decision. But I tell you what was killed and injured was my professional reputation. I got ripped apart for making that decision. And I had several people question my tactical decision-making as a young leader. And it probably would have ended right there if I had humbled myself and said, hey, you know, you're right. I made a bad decision. I need to learn from this. But I didn't. I let my arrogance get in the way, and I tried to justify my decision and say I was making the right decisions, that I was running to the sound of the guns, I was going down to support my guys. And I really refused to take ownership of what had happened. And I turned it into a victim thing. I was being thrown under the bus for trying to help out our guys. So thankfully, I had some leadership that believed in me and said, you know what, this kid could be a great leader, but we need to humble him. So they sent me to U.S. Army Ranger School, amongst some other things. And I'll tell you that there's a whole lot more stories. And in my book, I talk about Ranger School and that journey. But at the end of the day, what happened in Ranger School is I finally had some time to reflect on who I truly was and what my strengths, my weaknesses were. And as I peeled this onion back, I came to realize that I hadn't been a very good example of leadership, especially the ultimate level of leaders, that servant, selfless leader that understands the mission is first, the men are second, and your own personal goals and aspirations are absolutely last on that list. And I finally came full circle that when I was up on top of that valley and I wanted to get in and I went down, I wanted to get into that fight. And I saw an opportunity to make myself the hero by rushing down. And I saw a shortcut to being a good leader or being a good hero. And at Ranger School, I realized there is no shortcut to leadership. It is sustained superior performance over time. It's doing the right thing over and over and over again. And that is truly the definition of leadership by example. I'll finish with one point because I think it's so critical. The other critical thing that made me truly start this journey of becoming a student of leadership. When I was in Ranger School, there almost came a point that I quit. And it was because I had failed and made some mistakes. And I talked to a very senior SEAL leader who had been a mentor of mine. And this thing up inside here is a very dangerous thing because you always have a little voice that runs around and tells you things that aren't necessarily true. And people that listen to them oftentimes will quit and make bad decisions. Sometimes we have to squash that little voice. And that little voice was trying to tell me that you will never earn back the trust of the men that you're supposed to lead. You know, you messed up too big. You know, you messed up. I failed an evolution in Ranger School. So that was kind of the breaking point in my mind that I'd never be able to get back and lead. And when I talked to that senior SEAL leader, he said something that has stuck with me throughout my entire life. He said, people will follow you if you give them a reason to. And it made me, that was groundbreaking for me. And I went forward and crushed Ranger School and came back with a whole new mindset as a servant, selfless leader from that point forward.
You touched on a couple of things that I wanted to address with you, because one thing I do realize in anything we engage in, we need to have a mentor. If you want to have any degree of success, there has to be someone who's been there, done that, got the t-shirt, who could show you where the minefields are and how to avoid them. In the financial services industry, me working here with Tom has meant all the difference in the business that I have now. As you were transitioning in the military, you made mention of someone who mentored you. How many people did you look to for guidance and direction in that arena, and how many folks are you looking at now for guidance and direction?
So absolutely. I think it's critical. I mean, in the military, there were definitely some key individuals. I had two that stood out the most. One was my a leader that I grew up with. He was my commanding officer when I was a young enlisted guy. He got me commissioned. He, by far, is the greatest leader I've ever seen. I wrote a lot about him in my book just because his style of leadership was so powerful. And he was a mentor to me throughout my career in the harder moments. Just like that phone call, he was the one who said, people will follow you if you give them a reason to. The other one was my new officer in charge after I had screwed up and came back from Ranger School. There were a lot of people who, you know, they remembered the black marks, they remembered the bad call, and I was stepping into this arena where once again, I was gonna have to prove myself. And he was a tremendous mentor. He was an ex-enlisted guy who had been there and done that. And he sat me down from day one and he said, hey, I heard about what happened in Afghanistan. I don't care. From here, you start from ground zero. So everything you do starts from today. I don't care about the past, you know. And he gave me a lot of opportunities to lead and excel. He pushed me outside of my comfort zone so that he really challenged me as a leader. And he gave me great advice all the time. So in the military, those two guys were probably the best mentors I had. And in the civilian world, it's been a little different. I will admit it's harder to find a good mentor in the civilian world. The civilian world's a lot different. It's one of the things that we're looking at with the Overcome Academy. The civilian world, it takes a lot of, you have to lead yourself to success. And everybody else is trying to find success in the civilian world, as opposed to the military, where there are levels of accountability. It's pretty hard to totally fail in the military. Because somebody's going to jerk a knot in you several times over and get you back in line, because obviously lives depend on it. Mission success depends on it. In the civilian world, that doesn't necessarily work. Other people are all trying to be successful. If you're not successful, nobody cares. The reality, I mean, maybe there's some good companies that do, but at the end of the day, they're going to let you go. That's why it's so important when I talk to these other veterans about leading yourself. And that was one of the lessons that I really had to learn as I got out into the civilian world. And I was fortunate enough that I started bringing on board members for my organization. One, probably the best mentor I have now, he was a retired Navy pilot who went on to a very, very, very successful marketing career at a very large firm in Chicago, and then went on to become the executive director of the Ronald McDonald House for the entire tri-region, tri-state area up out of Chicago, raised millions and millions of dollars. And he became a great mentor for me, tremendous advice, just a great leader. So absolutely right. We should always look for those mentors, somebody who's done what you've done and has the ability to give you good advice and guide you. And now I'm trying to do it. I'm trying to do it with some other younger civilians that I've met along the way who I see a lot of myself in when I was younger, you know, ambitious, arrogant, impatient, and teaching them, hey, I was just like you. You know, you got to slow down a little.
You know, I'm going to correct something on your speech there. Trying is lying. We don't try, we do. You did it. You demonstrated that. When you were on the battlefield about to make the ultimate sacrifice, that wasn't trying, that was doing. That has translated into you doing some stuff now that's impacting a lot of veterans, and we applaud you for that. You made a comment about how you squash thoughts that come to mind. So in those moments when doubt, fear, unbelief try to creep in, what do you do to squash that?
You know, I just try and drive forward. And I also, I think I'm a lot more introspective as I'm older now. Sometimes I'll take a step back and say, why? Why am I having these thoughts? What's causing this? You know, sometimes it's, there are real reasons. Sometimes it's just, you know, the little voice inside your head that's afraid. I tell people, you know, Tom and I, we were talking about living greatly. And when I talk about living greatly, it is the idea, so many people let fear drive their decision-making in life. They're afraid of change. They're afraid of failure. They're afraid of what other people may say. They're afraid of, you know, whatever problems may arise in the organization or within their own lives from different things they're doing. And so many people won't act out of fear. They'd rather stay in this status quo area because they don't want to move outside their comfort zone. And oftentimes I've come to find when I have those moments of doubt or when I have those little voices in my head saying I can't do this, that's just fear. It's fear because I'm venturing into an area that I haven't done before. And it's natural. Human beings, there's a little bit of trepidation when we go into the unknown. But that's where you're truly forged, and that's where you get better. So it's at that time I just say, you know what? You got to live greatly. You got to drive forward. I equate it to skydiving. You know, in skydiving or in parachuting, you know, you stand in that. Did you ever jump? Were you ever jump qualified?
I would never jump out of a perfectly good airplane to save my life. I'm sorry.
Well, there's no such thing as a perfectly good airplane. So let's start right there. But the bottom line in jumping is you should never reach a point where there's not at least a tiny ounce of fear. Even guys that have over 10,000 jumps, there should still be an ounce of fear because you are stepping out into the great unknown, you know, at 10,000, 13,000, whatever feet you are. And until your parachute opens, there's so much that could go wrong. You know, there was a saying in jump school, you have the rest of your airborne life to fix a problem. And it's unequivocally true. But I feel like that analogy of standing on the back of that ramp, your heart pounding in your chest before you jump out of a plane is very similar to so many things we encounter in life. Most people that jump, 99%, realize that the fear itself was 1,000 times greater than the actual jump. And life is usually like that. So that's why I say it's always better to live greatly. Step off that edge. Know you're still alive. Because even if you fail, you're still going to learn so much more than to sit back and answer the what ifs. Because from a guy who faced death, and I look back on my life and I said, man, there were so many regrets in that moment. And I got a second chance. So I tell people now, I say, you have to live greatly. You have to, don't worry about failing. You'll grow stronger because of it. What you won't recover from is when you look back at the end of your life and all the things you didn't do because you let fear drive you.
That's a good response. I have to clarify a couple of things associated with jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. Unless it's going down, it's good. But I've seen so many folks, when I worked at SOCOM, I was in the directory with all the Green Berets, the Rangers, the SEAL. They used to do their jump. And it seemed like every time somebody jumped, somebody came back with an injury. And so that kind of led me to believe that's probably not a good idea. So I take my chances on the perfectly good airplane. You talked about being a knucklehead when you were younger. And in the Navy, we have these core values: honor, courage, commitment. Did they really mean anything to you early on?
I'll be honest, no. I don't think they did. And probably a lot of that has to do with arrogance. As young men, and I'm sure there's plenty of young women out there, we think we know everything, and everybody tries to give us advice. And I was an incredibly stubborn person, and my tenacity has been both a strength and a weakness. But it wasn't until much later in my career, really after I got myself in trouble, that I began to see the honor, courage, and commitment really reflected directly upon leadership. And I understood that as a leader, these are the baseline tenets that you have to live by. Because if you can't lead yourself, you said it right in the beginning, if you can't lead yourself, you're never going to be able to lead other people. And if you don't lead with honor, if you don't lead with courage, and if you don't show people you have the commitment that you're there for that job, that you not only respect the position you hold, you respect the people who are serving under you, people are going to see right through you, and they're not going to follow you. And when I was a younger leader, I was picking and choosing when I wanted to lead, not recognizing the impact those decisions were having. I tell people now, credibility is the currency of leadership. Mm-hmm. So if you're making bad decisions in your off time, it doesn't matter that it's your off time, because you are a leader in the eyes of people you lead 100% of the time. And so it took me some time to realize those things, but I finally grew up and understood that as a leader, it's absolutely critical that you have to lead always.
I got one final question for you. It's often been said that success is a process, not a destination. Do you believe that? And if so, why?
I unequivocally believe it. I believe that if you ever reach a point where you say, I've accomplished everything, you're at your first point of failure. Because there's so much to learn out there. I'm learning every day. So many people talk about, well, you know, you speak on leadership, you do all these things. I still make mistakes as a leader. You know, I'm running an organization, I have employees, and sometimes I make a bad call, I make a mistake, and I have to take a step back and say, okay, that let me figure out how I can do that better next time. So always, success, it is a long-term effort, and I do believe it's that idea that sustained performance over time is what leads to success. And oftentimes, when I see a successful person, this is something I've started doing when I resumes we write all our greatest successes of our lives, and I tell people, you know what? I don't want to hear about any of that. Tell me about how many times you failed. I want to hear about your greatest failure and how you recovered from it. Because that will tell you the mark of a man or a woman and how they recovered. If they let it destroy them and they just wrote everything off and they started a new life, I would be very concerned about hiring that person. If they addressed it and they figured out how to grow from it and drive through it, that's somebody that's got tenacity and is going to lead themselves to that long-term success.
I apologize. I did have one more question.
Okay.
What was your call sign?
Red.
Red?
Yep. Yeah. Red Man. So it got shortened to Red. When I was younger, it was Super Red Man. You know, guys that hear that know me will laugh. It was because I was a knucklehead.
Hey, I certainly do appreciate
it. I thought I was bulletproof. Obviously, I proved that wrong.
But you're still here.
Amen. I'm still here.
Thank you. Hey, thank you so much, Jason, for taking the time out to share with us. Look forward to meeting you in Vegas.
Hey, absolutely. You too. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your service.
Amen. You too.
Thanks for listening to Leadership Now, the official podcast of WealthWave. If you like our show and you want to know more, check out wealthwave.com/podcast, or you can leave us a review on iTunes. Join us each week as we talk about the topics you'll need to help you grow as an entrepreneur and succeed in the financial business with WealthWave.